All right, folks, welcome to Sans. This is Sans News Bites, annotated news update from the leader in information, security, training, certification, and research. This will be for the newsletter that was released on May 16th, 2025. It is volume 27, number 38. Email iMessage, JaredRimer at 986themix.com, or tech, that's TECH, at MikeEchoNovemberVictorIndia.org. That's menvi.org. You may also text or WhatsApp 804-442-6975. And you can also leave a comment on the voicemail line at 888-405-7524. If you want your comments aired, please feel free to let me know in the voicemail that you want your comments aired. Welcome to Sans, episode 15. On this episode, we've got Patch Tuesday stuff from Microsoft and others. Competition between the EU and US when it comes to vulnerability databases. Gartner says we can't patch our way out of threat debt. Chrome gets updated. Advanced protection comes to Android 16, and much more. If you would like a Braille copy of this newsletter annotation, please send an email to me and request either a 40 or a 30 cell Braille file, and we will send a direct BRF to you. We edited the BRF to have the bulk of what they had to say. In some cases, we have gone ahead and given you what the editorial team has to say. And in other spots, I wrote my own thoughts as I was putting this together so that we can lead the discussion. Here is the table of contents. Top of the news. European Union Vulnerability Database launches. Microsoft Patch Tuesday. Other security updates. Adobe, Juniper, VMware, and Zoom. The rest of the news. We can't patch our way out of threat debt, says Gartner's Craig Lawson. Chrome update includes 4 security fixes. Android 16 security enhancements include advanced protection to lock down phones. Marks and Spencer customer data were stolen. Attacker may now target US. Meta's AI data collection in EU spurs cease and desist from NOIB. That's NOYB. You'll learn more about them and what they stand for in that item. Industry leaders urge Congress to renew Cybersecurity Information Sharing Act. U.S. steel manufacturer says operations disputed following cyber attack. And that completes the table of contents. Note for the reader of the Braille file, it has been suggested we have no page numbering. So you can, in fact, search for what you want to look for and find it using your own technology. We actually are now going to start at the top of the page, and this is where the pages are going to differ between 40 and 30 cell. And we will start now with the top of the news. European Union Vulnerability Database launches. The European Union Agency for Cybersecurity's ENISA's European Vulnerability Database, EUVD, launched officially on Tuesday, May 13th, after its announcement in June 2024 as part of the EU's Network and Information Systems Directive to NIS2. The dashboard provides three lists: critical vulnerabilities, exploited vulnerabilities, and vulnerabilities coordinated by the EU's CSIRT's network. The EUVD is an analog to the U.S. Department of Homeland Security's Common Vulnerabilities and Exposures CVE program, and is itself a CVE numbering authority, CNA. Just under a month prior to the launch of the EUVD, the CVE program received an 11-month extension to its funding from the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, when supporting research nonprofit MITRE announced that funding would expire within 24 hours, leaving the fate of the program uncertain. ANISA has stated that it is, quote, in contact with MITRE to understand the impact and next steps following the announcement on the funding to the Common Vulnerabilities and Exposures Program, end quote. I personally took the opportunity to put in Duke's comments because it just fits. And he writes, it's unfortunate that the U.S. seems to have abandoned its leadership position in cybersecurity. Thank you, ANISA, and the EU in general for offering an alternative vulnerability database for the cybersecurity community. Also, Ulrich was very interesting, and Ulrich also writes, we may have a fragmentation of the vulnerability enumeration space coming up. At this point, CVE still, quote, rules, and EUVD does map to CVE. However, additional possible competitors have already announced their intent to introduce similar systems, further diluting the value of CVEs. Until now, the only CVE competition came from China's Vulnerability Registry, which was largely ignored outside China. Let's hope that the competition will lead to an improved vulnerability enumeration solution. Both are good to put here, I write, and it can be debated. And I ask the question, what do you think? I honestly think that if all of these can work together and make things work where people can look up what needs patching now, what doesn't need patching now, but may need patching later, is a good thing. Remember, the lower the score, while it's good to patch, it may not be a high priority. As we learned last week in that episode, we had several tens and, of course, CISA at least once a week puts out an email with high, medium, and low severity threats in tables. And yes, it's a lot to document. And maybe with the work of all of these different entities, which we may not know about, coming together and working together to get this information out there, we'll have a better idea of our landscape. I shall note that a good chunk of this newsletter is talking about the idea of patching. And we'll hear in later segments, as we talked about in the table of contents, how in some instances people are saying, well, maybe it's better not to have a patch system because look at all of what's happening now. You know, even with a patch system, the more you patch, the larger the system is going to be. And I guess we're going to have to see what happens in the long run. But for now, let's move on to Microsoft Patch Tuesday. And yes, I know, at the time I'm recording, I really should be considering blogging, but it's now the 19th of March, and the next Sans News Bites will be released soon, and I still haven't recorded for this one. And that's because of my weekend's shows. But that's okay. Let's move on now to Microsoft Patch Tuesday and talk about what's going on there. If you've not rebooted yet, your computer will more than likely prompt you to do so. And here's why. On Tuesday, May 13th, Microsoft released updates to address about 70 security issues. Of those, 11 are rated critical. 5 of the vulnerabilities, all rated important, have been actively exploited, and another 2 have proof of concept exploits available. The actively exploited flaws include 4 privilege elevation vulnerabilities, 2 affecting the Windows Common Log file system, another in Windows ancillary function driver, and the 4th in the desktop window manager library for Windows. The 5th is a remote code execution vulnerability in the Microsoft scripting engine. And I tell you what, all of these seem bad enough to me that I would say patch if you can. But I don't know if this is just 10 or 10 and 11. So I'll add that. Neely writes that this sets up Windows 11 for 24H2, which includes AI tools and, of course, Recall. And I wrote, nobody I know wants Recall. They're not saying this in the news bites, but I'm wondering if they actually really want Recall. I know that the Jared Reimer Network's Sean Everest has written in numerous diatribes commenting on Windows that nobody wants Recall. And he has been following my write-ups on Recall from the various security community folk. And yes, while I've not been blogging, I have been reading. Other security updates: Adobe, Juniper, VMware, and Zoom. Other vendors that released security updates this week include Adobe, Juniper, VMware, and Zoom. Adobe released fixes for nearly 40 security issues across their product line, including 7 critical vulnerabilities affecting Cold Fusion, 3 critical vulnerabilities in Photoshop, and additional critical flaws in Adobe Illustrator, Lightroom, Dreamweaver, Kinect, iDesign, Substance 3D, Painter, Bridge, and Dimension. Juniper has addressed nearly 90 vulnerabilities in Juniper Networks, Juniper Secure Analytics from 7.5.0 before 7.5.0, UP11, IF0. Users are urged to update to 7.5.0, UP11, IF03. VMware released 2 advisories, one for a high-severity cross-site scripting vulnerability in the VMware Aria automation appliance, and another for a medium severity insecure file handling vulnerability in VMware tools. Zoom released advisories to address 9 vulnerabilities, including a, quote, time of check, time of use race condition in some Zoom workplace apps that, in brackets, may allow an an authenticated user to conduct an escalation of privilege via local access. And that ends the quote. And that sounds very, very dangerous. So please make sure that you are as safe as possible. If the software prompts you for an update, make sure you at least apply it. You may never be affected, but you don't want to be. Want to contact the Jared Reimer Network? You may email or iMessage JaredRimer at 986themix.com. Text or WhatsApp 804-442-6975 or call the comment line at 888-405-7524. If you would rather text or iMessage tech, that's TECH at menvi.org, you can do that as well. You can also email that address too. If you'd like to donate, feel free to do that too. Visit my website at jaredrimer.net to learn more on how to do that. Under links around the main domain, search for the donations page. Here is the rest of the week's news. We can't patch our way out of threat debt, says Gartner's Craig Lawson. Gartner's May 2025 Infrastructure Operations and Cloud Strategies Conference in Sydney, Australia, included a session by VP Analyst Craig Lawson titled, "We Can't Patch Our Way Out of Threat Debt." Lawson suggests that organizations are better protected through measured cohabitation with unpatched systems whose flaws can be ameliorated by collaborative planning and corrective controls, using patching as one deliberate control rather than through arbitrary immediate implementation of every patch. Fear of threat debt, summarized by the Register as a measure of technical debt focused on known but unfixed security exposures, may lead organizations to devote resources to rapidly applying patches that do not yield improved defenses and may sometimes cause unintended damage. Lawson states that, quote, "Nobody has ever outpatched threat actors at scale," end quote, noting that attackers exploit only between 8 and 9% of vulnerabilities and may avoid critical severity flaws and zero days. He proposes that all teams with a stake in an organization's security posture, including IT operations, security teams, and applications teams, collaborate on a tailored plan for compensating controls and triaged patching. Developing a cohabitation metric and determining the individual treatment needed. You don't make a population healthy by giving everyone an aspirin. Some of the comments say not to even patch, while one says to patch. What says you? I would love to hear from you. And I should note that a link to the newsletter will be in our show notes and will also be made available on the technology blog, where you can simply click through and read more. I say, actors are going after 0 days. That's what they mean. They may not be going after every 0 day, but they will definitely go after 0 days. Don't you believe 1 minute that if you decide to go the unpatched route, the very 0 day that might target your system is the one that should have been patched. That's why, after so many years of us having to get Windows updates by hand, Microsoft, in particular, has made it their mission to try and keep us as up to date as possible. And even Adobe has too. Although the Adobe Reader program on my Windows 10 machine is almost 1 gig in size. What the hell have they put in this thing? No wonder my Adobe Reader updates have failed, because the Windows update cycle came around, it wanted a patch, and had no room on my hard drive, even though I should have plenty of space. But holy crap, I'm almost tempted to just remove Adobe Reader. But the problem is that I deal with PDFs these days with LA Metro, although I would really rather not, because some of them PDFs are definitely hard to read. That's beyond the scope of this program. Just to say that all of these patches will eventually fill up your hard drive like it's done mine, and then you don't have room to do anything on the drive. So I could see both sides, but I don't know if I really want to be fully unpatched. I think I would rather learn what 0 days are being exploited, patch those, and then if I learn that others are being exploited, then I'd patch those, instead of patching all of this stuff that may not even affect me. What says you? Leave your comments, and we will play your comments on a future program. You can email iMessage, JaredRimer, at 986themix.com, or text 804-442-6975, as well as WhatsApp And you can also call our comment line at 888-405-7524. And remember that you can also email or iMessage tech, that's T-E-C-H, at M-E-N-V-I .org. And if you want your comments aired and you email, you can let me know you want them aired, and I will read them. If you want your voicemail played, tell me, and I will make that work for you. Speaking of updates, Chrome update includes 4 security fixes. Google has updated the Chrome table channel for desktop to version 136.0.7103.113/.114 for Windows, Mac, and 136.0.7103.113 for Linux to address 4 security issues, including 1 CVE 2025-4664, for which an exploit exists in the wild. According to the NIST CVE detail, the high severity vulnerability is due to an insufficient policy enforcement in loader in Google Chrome prior to 136.0.7103.113 allowed a remote attacker to leak cross-origin data via a crafted HTML page. The vulnerability is one of 2 that were externally reported to Google. The second is a high severity issue related to an incorrect handle provided in unspecified circumstances in Mojo. I don't know about that one, but if you are lured to run a crafted HTML page, I say that's dangerous. Don't do that again. I actually found something interesting, speaking of interesting pages. I've been getting email to an email address, and it leads to these links like 121 dot something, so it's like a full IP. And then it's .secureserver.net with a whole bunch of, you know, letters and numbers and things. And one of these downloaded a 1 gigabyte zip file. And none of the virus total places got that one. And just on this very day, it seems like they wanted to deliver a Mac version, and it was picked up by 5 of the 91 detection systems through VirusTotal. And the emails come from some strangely looking domain that ends in SBS, Sierra Bravo Sierra. And Malwarebytes never picked up the one that I downloaded. I didn't try and pick up this one. But this is one reason why you should run Linux through antivirus and tools like VirusTotal, because it showed me where it was redirected in the details. And we've talked about VirusTotal on TSB on a regular basis. So don't think that just because you don't see these things, you won't eventually get them. I talk about these things when I get them, and then sometime later we learn that somebody else in the community I serve has gotten hit. Don't let it be you. Make sure you run those patches. You look at those links. You don't necessarily click on suspicious links or any of that stuff. Well, now that that call is done, let's go ahead and move on to our next item. And this one is now dealing with Android. Android 16 enhancements include advanced protection to lock down phones. Android 16 will include integrated advanced protection, a lockdown feature which was previously available for Google account holders and which will now be available as a device level security setting. Advanced protection for Android also securely backs up device logs in a privacy-preserving and tamper-resistant way, accessible only to the user. These logs enable a forensic analysis if a device compromise is ever suspected. Google is introducing a host of additional security features in Android, including AI-enhanced scam detection tools for Google Messages that operate on Android devices, and restrictions on dangerous actions when users are on calls with people who are not on their contact lists. Android will also see a pilot of improved in-call security for banking apps. And I don't know exactly what I think. The comments were similar to those that may be around for the lockdown mode you see in iOS these days in their latest releases. I guess we'll have to see what eventually happens with this. Can I say that Android is late? I don't know. I'm not going to go that far. But I don't know which models of devices will get Android 16. So I guess we'll have to see what happens when that becomes available. Marks and Spencer. I knew that skipping a week on this program wasn't going to cost too much. Maybe there were things that should have been covered that we didn't, and that's because of my schedule and what was going on at the time. But I honestly think that this is a playbook that must be followed because they're continuing to let people know what's happening. And this headline is no different than the ones we've covered in past news segments, whether it's this program or the aforementioned TSB. Marks and Spencer customer data were stolen. Attacker may now target U.S. On May 13th, 2025, UK retailer Marks and Spencer, M&S, filed an updated statement with the London Stock Exchange, LSE, to disclose that the cyber incident first reported on April 22nd, 2025, led to customer data being stolen. The update states, quote, the data does not include usable payment or card details, which we do not hold on our systems, and it does not include any account passwords. There is no evidence that this data has been shared, end quote. An FAQ page on the company's website clarifies that the personal data taken could include contact details such as name, email address, addresses, telephone number, date of birth, online order history, household information, and, quote, masked payment card details used for online purchases. For clarity and reassurance, M&S does not hold full payment card details on its systems, which is why we use the term masked. Customer reference numbers for M&S credit card or Spark Pay services may also have been taken, but these are not payment details. Customers will be prompted at their next visit or login to reset their M&S accounts and their passwords, so their M&S account password for extra peace of mind, end quotes. Though, the company says there is no need to take any action. Well, I will just pause and say if you're prompting to change your password, that is a prompt for action. That is a false sense of security. If you're saying you don't need to do anything, then there's no need to prompt people to change their password. M&S recommends customers take caution with links in messages, use strong and unique passwords, update devices regularly, and consult the UK National Cybersecurity Center, NCSC, website. The record reports information from the Financial Times that M&S may file a cyber insurance claim of £100 million, US $133 million. And this this is huge. Researchers at Google Threat Intelligence Group also believe the threat actor suspected to be responsible for the recent attacks on multiple UK retailers may now be targeting US companies. And the fact that they may be taking insurance out for £100 million, and yes, I was wondering if I should use UEB, so I was verifying what everything looked like before deciding that I should stay with the US English Braille code, which is what I would prefer to read. This is huge. We're continuing to learn more. They're making it public. This is exactly what companies should do. Now, Meta. We've had so many problems with Meta through the years that I don't even use their properties much. Yes, I did check out their dating service. I've only gotten one hit. Even when I said that I liked them and they liked me back, I could never find a way to message them. Not only that, I did get one message asking if I could come to Los Angeles, and I said yes. I do take the bus, and I go to Los Angeles on a regular basis. That was the end of it. It's not all that accessible, although Facebook itself is, and Messenger is, but I just don't find a value there. And no, I can't delete my account because of how public I am. Thanks, Kim. Well, this story is not about all of this stuff, but it's covering more potential legal and liability stuff because they just don't like following the law, it seems. Meta's AI data collection in EU spurs cease and desist from Neub. Austrian privacy non-profit Neub, European Center for Digital Rights, none of your business, sent a cease and desist letter on May 14th, 2025, giving Meta the opportunity to avoid litigation, in quotes, asserting that the company's treatment of EU citizens' data for AI training represents breaches of requirements and infringements on rights set out in the General Data Protection Regulation, GDPR. Max Schrooms, chairperson of Neub, denounces Meta's use of an opt-out system rather than the GDPR's required freely given specific, informed, and unambiguous opt-in for users to consent to their data being used. Meta will additionally require users who already opted out in 2024 to opt out a second time. The company claims legitimate interest, in quotes, to justify collection of data without consent. but Shrooms notes that, quote, the European Court of Justice has already held that Meta cannot claim a, quote, legitimate interest, end quote, in targeting users with advertising, end quote, contrasting the claim of an unambiguous, quote, legitimate interest, end quote, of banks recording CCTV security footage. Shrems also believes the nature of Meta's social media platforms and AI models will make them unlikely to be capable of complying with GDPR rights, like the right to be forgotten, the right to have incorrect data rectified, or to give users access to their data in an AI system. Noib urges that Meta ask users for opt-in consent to avoid the possible consequences of injunctions, such as deletion of the offending AI system and increased damage claims by users, and of class action lawsuits with possible damages in euros estimated in the billions. Shrems criticizes national data protection authorities, DPAs, for shifting the burden of responsibility on to users to opt out, rather than working to regulate companies conducting AI training without consent. Meta characterizes Noib as part of, quote, a vocal minority of activist groups, end quote, encouraging regulation that interferes with Europe's place in the global AI race, while Noib contends it is, quote, absurd to argue that Meta needs the personal data of everyone that uses Facebook or Instagram in the past 20 years to train AI. Neely writes, with today's privacy regulations, opt-in has to be the standard for data collection and services. Make sure you're aligned with current data privacy requirements, as getting this wrong is increasingly expensive. Dukes also writes, it is an interesting argument Noib makes, and one generally agrees, that vendors should require opt-in as the default. That said, vendors like Meta need large amounts of data to fully train AI systems to ferret out bias and hallucinations. Sometimes a bit more sharing can be good for humankind. I can see both sides, but to add to it, Murray pretty much wrote that we have a long way to go sorting out digital rights. So everybody in there is basically saying different things, and I can see all of the sides. The problem we have here is that Meta's never been interested in the law. Meta just wants to build, and if they are found to violate something, they'll pay their bill and move on. That's not really the way to do business, if you ask me. But hey, I'm actually glad I looked into COPPA when I did, at the time I did, because of something I spotted, which made me go make sure that I was following the law. And then, we basically are now saying on our website at the Music Education Network for the Visually Impaired, and in other sites we collect data, this is why, this is what we collect, this is what we use it for, and by submitting forms or sending email, you consent to this. That is an opt-in, and I am happy to comply with the GDPR. Now, speaking of GDPRs and other odds and ends, industry leaders urge Congress to renew Cybersecurity Information Sharing Act. Industry stakeholders testified before a U.S. House Homeland Security Committee's subcommittee on cybersecurity and infrastructure protection hearing, urging legislators to renew the 2015 Cybersecurity Information Sharing Act. The law, which, quote, allows industry to voluntarily share information about cybersecurity threats with the government, with liability safeguards in place that prevent firms from incurring legal actions that may arise from sharing sensitive data, end quote, is set to expire in September 2025. Frost writes that there should be no expiration date for something like this, and I agree. How are we ever going to keep ourselves as secure as possible if we don't know what other companies are going through, the fact that they are, you know, trying to solve an issue and trying to notify people? If we are never notified of breaches and other things going on in this industry, nothing will ever change. Oh boy. Here we go with something to do with why things should not be online. U.S. steel manufacturer says operations disrupted following cyber attack. In a filing with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, North Carolina-based steel producer Noker Corporation disclosed, quote, a cybersecurity incident involving unauthorized third-party access to certain information technology systems, end quote. As a result of the incident, Nuker took some of its systems offline, which has led to temporary suspension of operations at several locations. Nuker bills itself as, quote, North America's largest steel manufacturer and recycler. Frost indicates that we may see more stories like this one. Murray indicates that this company was very vague in what was said, and Dukes is basically saying that everything is online and there's not a lot of detail here. And I just realized that I misspelled a word for those reading Braille. Sorry about that. I say to take after Marx and Spencer and what they've done. It'll help everyone. Don't you think? The editorial board of Sans News Bites. The editors of Sans News Bites are Brian Honan, Kurt Dukes, Chris LG, David Holzer, Ed Scotus, Gal Spencer, Jake Williams, Dr. Johannes Ulrich, John Pescator, Josh Wright, Kathy Bradford, Lance Spitzner, Lee Neely, Mark Weatherford, Moses Frost, Suzanne Vatronaut, and William Hugh Murray. Sands Institute is located at 11,200 Rockville Pike, Suite 200, North Bethesda, Maryland, 20852. And if you need help with subscribing or anything else in regards to subscription management, you may call 301-654-7267. This podcast is done with the understanding that we link to all of Sans News Bites newsletters in our RSS feed and in our show notes when the show notes become available to the blog at jaredtech.help. Yes, I know there have been some mistakes while we're trying to read, and I am trying to do my best to make sure that these types of things don't happen on a regular. Some editing may have been done, but to edit this in full will take quite a while longer and will delay the release. Email iMessage jaredrimer at 986themix.com or tech, that's TECH, at menvi.org. Text or WhatsApp 804-442-6975, or you may call the comment line at 888-405-7524. The newsletter is a twice-weekly newsletter put out by Sands Institute. I'm Jared Reimer. I thank everybody for listening to the program. Trust me, we'll get better. I just need to slow down. Sometimes I just read too fast. Until the next episodes of Sans, I hope that you stay safe as possible, and we'll be back with another edition of Sans next time. Thanks for listening.